Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, if you're like me and you love talk radio and you can't find anything on the AM dial, how about doing this? This is J. Michael Michael for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me, you just go right to talk radio and you go to LA Talk Radio because we are the very best of what we do. We are a .com and we have it all from sports to music, entertainment. We even have psychologists for your listening pleasure. And right now we have the writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So grab that glass of wine. Open another box of chocolates, sit back, relax, because it's all starting right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Figured that was Paul Simon.
You got it. Again, we have an opening with Paul Simon and Angie from the Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. album.
Oh, sweet sounds. Sweet sounds.
I can pick a guitar. I mean, we listen to all these Western musicians, and they're all really good. And then you get Paul Simon on there. That's I mean, he's just like, that's his fort. He just finger picks. That's all he does.
And we're going to build a fort tonight.
So. I know, huh? Hey, this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, in studio tonight with Bob Brill, the wonderful guy from KNX 1070 Radio in LA, and our errant disappearing co-host, Bobby Jean Bell.
She's in studio.
In the studio with us tonight, because, well, she's here for the Cowboy Festival.
Absolutely.
This week. But Bobby has graced us. Actually, she was here Tuesday night.
I was twice this week.
And we had a great time with Junie Fisher.
Isn't that
oh, my God.
Fun?
She was such a great guest.
It was really fun.
She's much like tonight's guest, who's always a good guest. But Junie was. She was fun. She was
we
a great guest.
We laughed a lot.
Oh my God!
I overlaughed. I'm sorry for that.
You overlaughed.
If you didn't listen to the show, Bob, you have to, because that woman has got a sense of humor that you can't.
I'll go back.
She's funny.
It was wonderful.
She is great.
I'm still laughing at overlaugh.
Well, yeah. Cowboy Festival, the 13th, 14th. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, Saturday, Sunday. Free. William S. Hart Park in Newhall. We'll go through it again a little bit later. The Buckaroo Bookstore will be there. Bobby Jean and Jim Bell will be there. Bob Brill will be there. He'll have his Lancer Series books with him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're going to bring the stripper book, too?
I may.
Sell a couple.
Fan letters to a stripper. I'll probably bring a couple copies.
Yeah, and there'll be, I don't even know who's got JR's there.
J.R., Dale Jackson, Courtney Joyner on Saturday, Andrea Kidd, Katie Ryan.
On Sunday
Ryan,
only.
She's Saturday only, and Andrea's both days now, Saturday,
okay.
Sunday.
Eric and Al will be there both days.
Eric and Al.
Eric Heisner and Al, and J.R. Sanders and Bob, Margaret Brownlee, Janet Squires. And this year we're doing something new. You do have to enter to win. You do not have to be present to win. We will ship to you. But all of our participants are giving away book titles.
Excellent.
Bob's giving his entire series away.
Really?
All five of the Lancers.
Yeah, wow. So you want to come down to the Buckaroo Bookshop and enter to win and meet everybody that's there. And
it'll
be really fun.
Yeah. Sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
We'll go through it again.
Yeah,
looking forward to that cobbler.
And just so. Okay, get ready for a treat, because tonight's guest, all the way from Ohio, is a man who is just like, it's really hard to say anything about Mr. Hagenberger, because he's so many different things. Right now he's drinking out of one of our coffee cups, and I hope it's something alcoholic. But
what part of Ohio?
I don't know. We'll ask him then.
Yeah,
John, what part of Ohio?
Columbus.
Yeah.
I think we knew that.
Okay. Well, I'm from Pittsburgh, so we're in the same neighborhood.
And my husband's
you're 2 hours away.
Yeah. Columbus state. Jets used to play there.
There you go. Mr. John Hagenberger, he writes a series of books about Stan Wade, a LAPI that is in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s, and the books are just fun. They're just his office is in the back of the Brown Derby restaurant. He drives an old 58-59 Thunderbird.
Yeah.
The guy is just he's terrific, and he knows everybody. And I have to ask John, Mr. Name Dropper himself, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. John Hagenberger.
Hi, y'all.
Hi, y'all.
Howdy.
So what do you got good to say about yourself, John?
I wrote a Western.
You did?
Yeah.
When?
Yep.
Yesterday?
Called Bloody Wyoming about 2 years ago.
Really?
No.
Yeah, I got another one halfway through.
Really? You're
My
actually writing a Western?
Ace Hart. Much like Brett Maverick.
Because Mr. Wade dressed up in Bart Maverick's Brett Maverick's clothing from
secretly for the Secret Service.
So it's a Bret Hart type of thing.
Well, actually, John's latest Stan Wade book is actually I'd say more of a novella, wouldn't you?
Oh, you mean the
Shortfall?
The Shortfall.
Yeah,
that's a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's about five short stories.
Right. It's a fun read.
It's
fast
so
read.
So fun. All the L.A. stuff and the,
We were talking about that earlier, and Bob Brill and myself have both been around L.A. for 100. Well, I was born down here in L.A., not L.A., but San
I moved
Diego,
out from Pittsburgh.
And you moved out of Pittsburgh to L.A., and I mean, we've been here a long time, a lot of years, and there's places you mentioned that a lot of people don't know existed.
Yeah.
Like Palisades Park, sitting right at the edge of the bluff. I mean, not people that don't live in L.A. have no idea that's there, and you nailed it.
I do.
Well, yeah, you do, apparently.
Corriganville
and CB Valley.
Yeah. And that's one I want to talk
Park
to you about.
I knew, I've been to Corriganville, of course not, but it was just such a crazy, fun place with so much references that I could draw from.
Sure.
I said, I got to take him there.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, the thing about Corriganville, Jim and I and Bobby and I were talking earlier, my father would take me there at least one weekend a month when they would do the shows and it was open to the public.
Right.
During the late 50s and early 60s when Crash Corrigan was still alive before he sold it to Bob Hope.
Right.
And it was just such a great place for a kid to go, you know, because you could walk down and you saw these shows where they put on. And one of my favorite things was they showed us, they hung Joaquin Murrieta.
Oh!
And they showed us how they would hang people in the movies, right?
With the harness.
Yeah. And they made this big deal about, okay, all the kids have to stay until it's over, and we're going to show you how we do this so none of you kids go out and hang yourself, you know.
Right. Right.
And it was just amazing. It was just such a great time to grow up. So.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of really cool that you included Corriganville in anything.
Yeah. Well, it no longer is there. I mean, the only thing there is are the pads where the buildings used
to be. Yeah, that's about it. And it's now a county, I think it's a county park.
And up where Fort Apache used to be, that was the Simi Valley pistol range.
Right. And they still have the what used to be the lake.
Yes.
The bridge is still there.
Robin Hood Lake.
Right. And the lake, they have the camera where it was below the water.
Right.
Matter of fact, for the video for Lancer, we shot part of that out there, and we used some actual
footage. Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it was out there, so it was good stuff.
Now, see, I don't know if you recall, but I put it in, but the lake is mentioned in the story.
Yes, it is, yes.
With references to how it was used during the filming of The Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Right,
oh, yes,
right.
Yes,
and you also
right.
mentioned
okay.
that every the couple of the stagehands went down there and had lunch by the lake.
Oh, God. I don't remember that, but okay.
Jesus, and you wrote the book.
Oh, man, my memory is going so bad, I can't even remember for sure who I'm talking to.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that in a way, because I finish books and prepare for the show, and then they fly right out of my mind. I don't remember what I read or who wrote them. Or
well, that's because you have to read so many.
So, I saw a really good movie the other day on television, and we were almost to the end, and I went like, oh, I've seen this before.
I know. And doesn't that just really piss you off? Because you get all the way through it, and you go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I know how it ends, because I've watched it two weeks ago.
So what was the movie?
what was the movie?
Hmm?
What was the movie?
It's a silent film, okay?
Oh.
I'm a big silent film fan, so
which
it was
one?
A silent film that I thought I'd seen it. It's the French version of of Monte Cristo.
Oh, okay.
And it's like 3.5 hours long, and I got almost to like the last half hour, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I've seen this.
There's a French version of silent film that's 3.5 hours long?
And it's 3.5 hours long because half of that is you had to put the subtitles up.
Well, doesn't the piano player get tired?
No, they got full orchestra. They really respect the cinema.
Oh, wow.
Cinema.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you did this new book, Shortfall. And you've also got a couple science fiction books that are new or fairly new. One is Oxymoron, and the other is Pandora's Break?
Block.
Block.
Pandora Block. Pandora's... Yeah,
so talk Pandora to us Block. About Pandora Block.
Yeah, talk to us about that one, and tell us what it means when you look at your phone and it says, recalled to life.
Or back to France. back to Monte Cristo, by God.
There you go.
The Pandora Block is, I don't think of it as science fiction. I guess you can, but I wrote it so that by the time it got published, it would be pretty much current in dates. So when I was writing it, I guess I was writing about the future, but now I think the dates are dead on exactly what it is right now, although everything's like an alternate reality because a lot of the stuff I have in this story, mm-hmm. of course, doesn't really exist in our reality, right?
Uh-huh.
But it was my attempt to do like a Clive Cussler international high-tech world-spanning adventure thriller type of a book with an ensemble cast of characters running around, getting in all kind of trouble, and ultimately saving the world or finding some vast treasure. I guess it is science fiction now that I remember. I've written 15 books in the last 3.5 years,
And
sometimes I lose track of what was in which.
Well,
the one with the spaceship and the sonic sounds and
yes.
all that stuff, right?
Well, yes, yeah. there's a horrible virus. It kind of, mm-hmm. you know, you start us off with already a number of different issues, but there is an epidemic that is horrible. And it's sweeping the world. It's in a particular area, and it's affecting a certain ethnicity of people. But we know that it is going to expand.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah. Where did you get that? Where did this idea come from, John?
Well, the virus is pretty common, but the idea that it would target a specific type of person. And then maybe create an extinction event. I hadn't seen that done before, so I thought, okay, that's something that somebody needs to write about. Why not me? So I took it on and decided that would be really a scary threat to some people. To some other people, it may be a good idea. Yeah, let's, you know, let that happen. So that it has political overtones. And like all, I guess, good science fiction, it has a certain amount of possibility to, if you think about it for a moment, you go like, that's a little scary. Hope that doesn't really ever happen, but it could, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the target that I shot for, and I just ran with it.
You bring together an interesting group of people. They've worked together in the past, and then they've each sort of gone their separate ways, and they get brought together again. And you'll have to remind me, because I couldn't remember if we'd read these characters in another book when they had worked on something together, or if you imagined them for this book.
You are so good. Yeah, well, some of the characters are brand new, and some of the characters are the granddaughter, Stan Wade.
Stan Wade.
Okay. That answered that question. Miko.
And the son of Elliot Cross,
okay.
who was my other private eye here in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
So it's a crossover to that extent, a generational saga touch. I try to connect everything into one, the Higginverse.
the Higginverse.
That's very interesting.
I'm going to have to copyright that now.
Well, hurry.
When you deal with writing about something like a virus, how much medical research do you do? And because there's also got to be some sort of thing, unless you're in the medical field, it's got to be kind of a scary, so to speak, because you want to try to be as accurate as possible, not say something that really can't happen. But at the mm-hmm. same time, you want to make it so that it's your own to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, my brother-in-law is a virologist, a professorship. He just retired last year, the year before. And so I picked up a lot of good reality research checking through him. But in essence, it's kind of like an extension of the whole sickle cell anemia process, taken out to I guess to the max. I don't know, on steroids. No, you can't say that. But
yeah, you can.
A lot of the if you look at the back of the book where the research stuff and the the tips and tricks and stuff are listed. What I was really going for was to try to figure out how to stop the virus. So I wasn't really interested in what causes vampires as much as, you know, what can you do to get rid of them, you know? So the research that I did there is authentic. The device is patented, does exist, and has been built. I think it's being used the last time I checked, which was a year ago when I was doing my homework. But the idea of being able to shatter the virus through sonic vibration is absolutely authentic and true. And like I said, it's patented, and the research information is in the book if you want to go home and dig it out. Does that kind of answer what you were looking for?
Yeah, yeah, because I was really concerned about, you know, as far not concerned, but question, trying to find out exactly, because I don't write about medical stuff if I don't have to, you know.
No, he writes about gunfighters.
Yeah, right. And it's I mean, it's got to be sort of a challenge to you. I mean, it's got to be one of those things that, you know, okay, how do I tackle this? Do I want to tackle it?
Well, if you write science fiction like I do sometimes, that's, you know, you bump into the science stuff by nature, and it spins off maybe as useful content for other books, other things that are in a mystery or a thriller.
Well, and I know we don't want to do spoiler alerts, except to say to our reading audience, you need to get this book because it's a romp, and you just turn the pages as fast as you can, and you inhale it very quickly, and it's quite a story with really cool characters. But as you just mentioned about the being able to attack the virus with sound, sonic, and I remember as you're unfolding that, and I thought to myself, because you sort of, it happens over the world, so there's a lot of that sonic stuff going on, and I thought, there's going to have to be some other kind of repercussion. We're going to eliminate the virus, but this has to have some other lingering consequences, and of course you give us that, so you'll need to read the book to find out what happens.
Yeah.
But I was on the edge of my seat, for sure.
I think you're talking about conflict.
And then there was
in
some...
In the back of my mind is the sequel, The Ulysses Shock, which does a lot more to deal with things like tremors and earthquake stuff.
Well, and then you have this character, and you so startled me. She's out in this field in some kind of a Jeep or something. They're going across this field, and they're being attacked by a drone, and a condor enters the sky. That was very cool, and I thought, what an imagination, but that's something that's really happening. Tell us about that.
All I could say, I guess, is my recollection was that I wanted everybody's using drones. Now, remember, I wrote this a year or so ago, so they're doing it all the time now, but they were just starting to use drones a lot, and I wanted to take the high technology of the drone and kind of find a way to, something simple and basic like lightning bolts or something, you know, would be able to take it down. And then I had a friend who does some falconing, and I started thinking about that, and then I realized that interesting little factoid that they put in the book about how in Central and South America, like I think it's 9 out of 10 nations' flags have a condor on them. So, it's not an elephant, it's not a bear, you know, it's a bird. You know?
Right.
I thought, absolutely, we got to do that since they're down in Colombia.
Oh, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a wonderful read, John. Wonderful read.
Thank you. I don't think of it as imagination. I just piece it all together. I just find, okay, there's a hole here. What can I put in here that really makes that? Oh, yeah, wait a minute. And when the piece is all locked down like that missing piece in a jigsaw puzzle, it's a real Nirvana kind of moment. You know?
Yeah.
You're like,
oh,
wow.
Absolutely.
Wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Shortfall, and that's regarding Jimmy calls it name dropping.
First name sometimes, or last name yeah. only, and you have yeah. to think about it.
And you got to guess who it
you
is.
You got to guess it.
Are you picking people that you have a special affinity for, or are you picking people that you're actually looking for someone who kind of fits that role or out of your comfort zone? That's where I'm kind of curious.
I guess what keeps me going from the beginning of the story to the end is that it is something that I have an affinity for. I guess I would prefer not to have somebody assign me to write a story about, pick a name like, Jerry Lewis, you know. If I don't really care for Jerry Lewis, I don't think I'd really be able to do a nice job.
Right.
So, yeah, it ends up starting. That's great. It starts up at the end where I'm looking for something that I like and I want to keep back alive. Like, I think Corriganville deserved one more shot, you know. And I think a lot of the characters and stuff have done stuff that I've enjoyed, and I feel like I owe them back a little bit. So maybe I can bring them back one more bow they can take.
That's great. I
would agree with that.
I think it's a wonderful concept, to be honest with you.
And you know what really, when I was reading it, I was in Corriganville with you, and you were walking through the Western Street, and I remember as a kid walking through the Western Street, and then seeing Ray Corrigan, because he's always riding up and down the street on his horse, his big Palomino horse. Yeah. And but then you mentioned something about Ray Corrigan and his movie lot that very few people even knew, and you knew it, and I was amazed. And that was when he played the gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
And he only did it one time.
Oh no, he did it several times.
Oh, I know he in movies, but I know he would only wear it like he only wore it one time on the set because it's so hot.
Well, yeah, it would be right. I agree. I actually didn't know that he ever did it on the set.
Yeah,
I just decided that since he did it so many times, and since I had the opportunity to work it in, I did.
Yeah, you did, and you know he used to live right at the end of the street.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, as you were coming down from Stearns or...
Stearns is one of the
Yosemite or whatever it is. Yeah, as you're coming down, it was a house right at the edge of Corriganville. It was a nice little ranch house there. That was his house, and they used to use it in the movies. So that was always the rancher's big, expensive ranch house.
Yeah.
They'd have to move him and his wife out while they filmed, and then they'd move him back.
You know, there's no mistaking those rocks out there. You know, yeah. I mean, there's another movie ranch out that way, too, and you still see some of that. But when you see those rocks, you know it's Corriganville.
Right. Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely right. Absolutely. I've seen those many, many times, didn't realize it, but I've seen them so many times.
Yeah, in the movies, yeah.
If I saw a brand new movie today, I would know, well, that's the same place in those other 75 movies.
Exactly.
And then I was able to put a name to it all, and it became real and true.
Well, you know what's really great is when you're going down the 118 past Chatsworth, and you're just about hit Rocky Peak, and you look to the right, and there's a Lone Ranger rock sitting there.
Yeah.
It's like the Vasquez Rocks, totally different
Vasquez
area.
Rocks, Vasquez Rocks, same thing.
Yep.
And then if you get off at Rocky Peak and walk up the hill about less than a quarter of a mile, the old Lone Ranger silver mine is up there. And it was a man-made cave that looked like a deep mine,
because
they never went inside the mine. They always talked out on the outside of the mine. But and that's where Manson and a bunch of his people used to spend a lot of time up there.
I've heard that story now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then, really historical place. I mean, it's
Corriganville is
made
like
up history, but also
awesome. Corriganville is a really great place. When you're writing your stories, where do they come from?
I don't know.
Well, come on. We got new writers listening to this show, John. Help
them
out.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, I hate to break it to them, but sometimes they don't come. Sometimes you do have writer's block, you know?
So, you want to do that question now?
Doing that question early.
No, just to say, though, that...
He said he had a different answer for us.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. But just to say that if they don't come, it's okay. Don't force it is my point. But when you get them, you know you got them. I don't know. It's like having a cold, I guess. I don't know. You get it. I mean, you're watching some show or you're reading some book or you're mowing the lawn or something, and all of a sudden you go like, oh, you know what?
Got to write this down.
Yeah, and it isn't like you got to write because it isn't full-blown to be a story,
right.
But it's like this really nugget of cool stuff, and you need to maybe jot it down or something.
So you don't forget.
Yeah, and for some reason I decide that at some point one of those is extremely powerful, more powerful than the other, the last six or something, you know? And I say, okay, I just sit down, you know, let's just roll with it and do what if, and what could I do to make it even cooler or more fun or niftier or whatever, you know? And then I go and I check, like I go to Google or something,
uh-huh.
And I say, is it possible that that person actually could have been there, or was he dead by then, or was that building gone, or they hadn't built it yet, and all that kind of stuff. I'll do some of that research, and like I said a little earlier, suddenly that piece of the jigsaw puzzle will pop in, and I go like, holy mackerel, I got a story. So, I mean, I've got a Stan Waite piled up sitting here to be written, and it's going to have something to do with John D. MacDonald. And it's going to have something to do with gambling in Vegas again. And it's going to have something to do with Bing Crosby. I don't know what.
Boy,
you know, but when that piece of the puzzle clicks in, I'll have the story and I'll sit down and I'll write it. That's where they come from.
There's a name that I haven't heard in a long time, John D. MacDonald. Travis McGee.
I thought you meant Bing Crosby.
That's what I thought you meant, too.
And you used the name Busted Flush on something. Oh, that was in the Oxymoron.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to read Oxymoron.
John, are you a baseball fan?
I didn't understand.
I said, are you a baseball fan?
No. I actually had to go figure out who Lefty O'Doul was.
Oh, okay. Well, the only reason I bring that up is you said Bing Crosby, and Bing Crosby used to be the treasurer and team secretary for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure. Oh, is that
Pirates
right?
Pirates and Hope had the Indians, right.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about it was the seventh game of the World Series, nobody had that. About 5 years ago, they found it in Bing Crosby's basement.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, they found the tape of it, and they had an anniversary, one of the anniversaries not long ago. But, yeah.
Huh. I know he was one of the big owners of the Del Mar Racetrack. Big owner.
Interesting. Well, there's definitely some stories there.
You think?
Oh, I've been covering that one.
I parked his car once. He gave me a $100 tip.
Really?
A serious business. Serious business.
The only work I did with Crosby so far was... That's the reason that Stan has a white streak in his hair, because he got knifed at some affair at Crosby's. I don't even remember anymore. It's in the first book. And it's backstory stuff, so it gets mentioned for a paragraph.
Boy, you're breaking up real bad.
That's strange. I'm not moving anything different. Maybe the battery's dying.
Oh, did you drop your phone in a glass of water? That'll do it.
I sound like I'm gurgling?
No, like the phone is gurgling.
Go get some rice.
Okay, it was okay. It was like one sentence. We lost you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody's cleaning the satellite. That's all.
You got the Windex out there.
What do you like to read when you're not writing?
Not much in the last couple of months. I stayed away from reading anybody else's stuff. Mm-hmm. But prior to that... Mm-hmm. Let's see. Was deep into Margaret Atwood. Was deep into Herman Woke. Deep into Stephen Connell. His Shane Scully cop series that he wrote after retiring from racing television series.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it was something else. Oh, Craig Johnson. I read his, although his last book didn't.
Craig Johnson.
Yeah.
Well, he asked me the other night if we've had Craig back on. I said, no, not yet.
Just the two times, yeah.
He'll
be here in about 2 weeks.
Make sure you get in there to visit him and say hi.
Yeah, well, he's at the main library. I'm there a week ahead
of him. Oh, he's coming to a local library near you?
Yeah, the main Columbus, Ohio library.
Oh, that's, yeah, I know. He loves to do library
events.
He's
a wonderful guy. You'll love him.
You'll have such fun.
Thanks. Yeah. I look forward to it. Yeah. So I like his work a lot.
Yes, we do too.
We do too. Yeah.
I think I try to make Stan a little bit like Walt Longmire, the way Craig Johnson writes him. little self-deprecating, doing the best that he can, and hopefully, you know, he won't screw something up.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets beat up as often.
Yeah, it would be a Stan Wade book if he didn't get beat up at least twice.
Walt gets beat up a lot, I think.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about writing a series. One of the rules of my writing this series was, in every book he has to get not beat up, but he has, like, in one he gets punched in the eye, uh-huh. and another one he has a tooth knocked out, and another one he like sprains his ankle or something, you know, and you know, so almost every book you'll find that some other simple, dumb little ailment that we mm-hmm. all experience is now on top of everything else happening in the story. Now he's got to deal with stuff like that too,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and sometimes there's not really a lot of months between the stories.
No.
When you're actually sitting down to read them. And so, you know, I've often wondered if he's, I say finally, like, did he recover from the physical thing that just, you know, that happened? Maybe
from
we read about,
leg.
You know, 6 months ago, but the next story is picking up right.
Is he still limping?
Yes, he's still limping.
Do you find...
I was conscious of that enough that I think there's a mention in one of the books after he had the, almost lost an eye, where in, I think, the very next book, there's a mention somewhere about still recovering from it, or good thing, you know, he still has, you know, two good eyes, because if this had happened last month when I had my eye almost poked out.
Hey, we're going to take a break here. Don't go away. We're going to do a couple commercials, and then we'll be back with you. So hang tough, John.
You bet.
Okay.
When you open your closet door, do you say, I need something new? Or, it's time to retire some of these boring shirts? Or, if I only had. What would you like to see when you open that door? Boots, hats, cool shirts, boho tops? Out West Shop will revive your wardrobe with new fresh looks for men and women, all with great style and comfortable fabrics and for every occasion, even like a steampunk wedding. Shop www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378 for personal attention. Out West delivers style door to door, coast to coast, and around the world. And remember, it's always a great day out West.
And you're leaving on vacation.
You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. But oh, what about the dog? Well, All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and more training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. Well, we know it's the dog. So All Dogs Rule, day camp and sleepovers, 805-524-1100. And it is 7:33. We're back on studio live with John Hegenberger in Columbus, Ohio. And if you want to call and talk to John, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And welcome back, Mr. Hegenberger.
I'm glad to be back. And I'm remiss not thanking you for having me on at the very top of the show.
Oh, no worries. No worries. You're always welcome. And, you know, this is, what, your third trip in, so...
I think it is. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, we enjoy, you know, there's certain authors that we just absolutely love to have back, and you're one of them. So there you go.
Hey, John, I wanted to ask you about when you're writing a series, the things you mentioned. I mean, there's sort of usually a formula of some sort, but you do have things that recur. Do you ever run into the situation where it's like you forget that thing, or you have to go back and reread something just to make sure that you're in line with the character?
I've been lucky so far, but I'm actually, this is a slight cause for writer's block, because you sit there and go like, oh, where was that? You know, it's like, you know, what did I come in here for? Where did I put that? and it'll stun you, you know? You go like, but I want to put it in, but, you know. So the best I've found is put it in, you'll figure it out later, you know. I mean, you know, make a note to double-check it sometime, but don't let it slow you down too much.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a good editor would probably also, gentlemen, those of you that write, a good editor helps you
sometimes,
identify.
Sometimes they pick it up,
on something that,
if you're using the same editor.
Yeah.
If
you know, what I find myself doing is that I use characters in multiple books, and they show up and they leave, and they show up and they leave. And if they did something like noteworthy in book two, then by the time book six rolls around and I'm talking about that character again, you go to mention what he did that was noteworthy, and I can't remember it. And then I can't remember when it was that he did it. So save all of your manuscripts. Never give away a manuscript.
I have the same thing with Lancer in some of the same situations, because I know there are certain things that are going to happen along the way. It's just different people in different circumstances, but I got to make sure that I haven't either used them before or except the Turkish Delight, which we always use.
Yeah.
And I bought two boxes the other day.
And no pistol in his holster.
Wait. Yeah, no pistol in his holster. Yeah.
Well, on the cover, or the color of his eyes, or, something that. Yeah.
He finger draws.
Oh, yeah. You got to have a character sheet written down for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah.
How old is he?
Wait a minute. Let's see. He was born.
Was he allergic to? 10, 20,
30, 40. Each finger's a 10, so.
You do write. Do you feel that each book is able to stand alone, or you know, are you feeling you always have to spend a little catch up time before you get into it?
Each book does stand alone. I'm not sure what you mean by touch up.
Well, I guess I'm thinking you are so prolific. So here I'm already forgetting if there's actually series where one is following the next, where a reader would need to be given some background before you get very far into it, or
you
not.
Need to be, need to be kind to the reader, and that's one of the hardest parts about writing is how do you not bore the reader who remembers and knows all this already, and yet inform the new reader of the essential info or the background info or whatever. So you just have to be creative and find a new way to work it in. And you have to be creative and work stuff in all the time, all over the book. So, it's not that unusual to have to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. I think with Pandora Block, we get the sense right from the get-go. These people used to kind of work together. They were thieves. And then someone betrays some, they fall up. They're dysfunctional, and they need to come back together again. And it was interesting how slowly you told us the backstory without just, having the first several pages just be, fact-finding. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that. There were times I'm like, wait a minute, what? No, wait a minute, what? I just sort of go back a
That's
few
dangerous.
Pages.
it's scary and it's dangerous to do it that way, but it adds a mystery. You're paying attention to the main storyline, but maybe in the back of your mind, you're still wondering, like, why are they acting that way? Why did he say that? It helps maybe to focus on some of that background stuff as a breather between the events of the main storyline. Mm-hmm. So you got an A role and a B role kind of a thing. Mm-hmm.
Bob and I write on philosophy, and our philosophy is our main characters. We don't actually give descriptions of what they look like. We kind of let our readers find that on their own, because everybody that reads a book, whether he's described or not, always gets their own vision of the main character, the protagonist. And Bob, we do that on purpose. And do you find yourself doing that as well?
No. That sounds like you're doing like Pranzini would do with Nameless. You know, this, your characters are faceless, I guess. No, I think the character, all the characters, including the main one, need to be fully described and fully fleshed out. And another one of the problems you've got to do is figure out how to tell the reader what this guy looks like, especially if it's first person, without mm-hmm. having him shave or look in the mirror or do something very obvious. Mm-hmm. So they say, oh, look, he's 10 feet tall and weighs 175 pounds. You know, it's a challenge to be able to solve that, but I think I want to see the character. So if I saw him on the street, I'd recognize him, as opposed to let the reader imagine themselves as being maybe this faceless character going through the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Either way is right or wrong. You know, it's just the way I prefer to deal with it, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Because mm-hmm. we actually, I described the character loosely.
Yeah, the same way.
And like he'll have long range cut hair and a big bushy mustache and 4 day growth of beard, wears a
That's
vest and a shirt, bandana, leggings, pistols, wearing his holsters on the left hand side and a cross draw. You know, wears a hat that's slightly turned up in the front.
Perfect.
You know, and but I don't, you know, he doesn't have a hawk nose or, you know, squinty eyes or, you know.
Yeah, I probably purposely stay away from any real facial description
right.
or, you know. I know what he kind of looks like, but I'm one of those guys that when I write, I want especially if you're a female reader, I want you to figure out who he is, which is why I never put a face on the cover either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always a controversy about that. You know,
yeah.
a lot of guys, especially when you do Westerns, you know, the publishers all want, and maybe they're right, you know, the publishers all want the shirtless cowboy who's...
That's the romance.
Yes.
Those are the romance
Fabio
covers.
One.
Yes,
you know?
Fabio.
Romance
yes.
covers. Not necessarily the Margaret Brownlee romance
That's
covers,
true.
But
That's
those
true.
Are the romance covers.
No, hers are like G-rated.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of the males on her covers are not.
They don't have their shirts off.
Yeah, they're,
They're not naked like
yeah.
Fabio was.
Well, let me ask you, are you going for he's just ordinary looking, or are you going for, without saying he has a broken nose or a big scar across his left eyebrow, he's almost faceless, you know.
Well, he's a normal guy. He's every man's man. He's a little overweight, about 5 foot ten, walks with a stoop because he spent years and years and years and years and years in the saddle.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, there's certain things that you can describe somebody without having to say their facial features. So if you see him from the back, you know who it is.
But you're bad
guys. I just find it interesting that...
My bad guys are great.
Your detailed description of what he wears and what his hair looks like and all the stuff, but it's almost like you're afraid to describe his face.
No.
It's like you'll describe anything, but not his face.
No, because I get a lot of people say, oh, that's Sam Elliott or that's Tom Selleck. Or
they put their own faces.
Yeah, they put their own faces on them.
And that's where I am, too.
Yeah, who we want to see.
Yeah, I really want the reader to decide whether he has blonde hair or black hair, or whether he has curly hair
right.
or long hair. It all depends on, you know, for me, it all depends on what the reader sees in the character I develop mm-hmm. and where that character goes and what he does. And my feeling has always been that if I describe the character and you don't like him, you're probably not going to come back.
Well,
you know,
that's,
and
I suppose that's a valid point.
Yeah, and but if you describe him, then you're vested.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, John, I don't think there's no right way and there's no wrong
right.
way. It's just personal preference way.
Okay. Well, I really don't think it through as much as you guys.
Interesting.
We're on a topic that is sort of new to me because it seems something I hadn't really given a lot of thought to.
It's same thing with dialogue. Now, there's ways of writing dialogue that are actually how people speak. And then I'm reading a book right now that I have to talk about tomorrow on a show. And she does what Craig Johnson does with Henry Standing Bear. He does not use contractions.
Yeah, he does not use contractions.
Uh-huh. So, but every character in her book, there's no contractions. And I've never heard anybody talk like that. Well, I cannot do that. I will
can't,
not.
Can't do that?
It won't. can't and taint if you're stupid or rustic.
Yeah, if everyone speaks like that, it sounds like Downton Abbey or something.
Exactly, exactly. It sounds like somebody just wrote a script for somebody that lives in New York. Well, I cannot do that.
Like Edwardian drama or...
Well, yeah, possibly, huh?
Trying to be very, very upper class.
Well, speaking of dialogue, let's get into dialogue. We have a couple minutes. Do you like writing dialogue? You seem to be very good at it.
I like the dialogue because I like the fact that it's stand-up comedy sometimes, and the characters themselves are sort of acting on the stage, and I get to be stage manager or director. So coming from a background of liking a lot of comic books and stuff, if you think about outside of the pictures, all you get is dialogue.
That's true. That's true. So, well, dialogue
sort of pops in on me.
Sure. Well, dialogue gives credence to the character. It gives you some kind of a base to go with the character on. Now, whenever they hear that dialogue, they know it's him because everybody's different.
Yeah, there was a time where somebody in a writing class once told me that you don't create like three characters, put them in a story, and make one of them stutter and the other one, do some other audible trick to the way they talk. Because it becomes annoying to the reader. They begin to sit there and say, you're trying to make him distinctive, but you're overdoing it.
Well, I did a stutterer one time. But his brothers all told him to shut up because he did stutter.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah. Quickly, right?
Hey, look, we're out of time, Mr. Hagenberger.
We are.
We just blew past this time.
It's been nice being here.
Well, we love having you, and you want to tell people where they can get your books and your email addresses, et cetera, et cetera? Etc. To quote you, Brenner.
I'm going to pass. If they really want to find the book, no. The name is John Hagenberger. If you Google it or whatever, you'll find it on the usual places, Twitter and Facebook. And I've got a webpage, johnhagenberger.com. And what am I forgetting? There's other stuff, right?
Yeah, Amazon. You can find all your books on Amazon.
Amazon, right.
Right, all the online booksellers. And if you see a picture of John Hagenberger, don't flinch. He's the one with the hat. The fedora.
The
fedora. You, Mr. Private
again,
Eye.
Huh? Bobby, good talking with you again. Thanks for reading my stuff, lady.
I'm so happy to be here to talk with you tonight, John.
Good having you, John.
Yeah, John.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks for reading my stories.
We had no worries. No worries. Love them.
Keep writing.
We'll talk soon, pal.
You too. Take care.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye. Mr. John Hagenberger.
That was fun.
It blew by. This
it
time
did.
Blew by.
Yeah. It did.
Wow.
It did.
That's amazing. Amazing that somebody can keep your attention wrapped for that long.
You know, that book, Pandora Block, it's the first one I think we've read that was written in current, not first person, not third person. It was like current time. Like, I don't think we've read anything. And it was a little different.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, he wrote it while back, making it future, but then now is the future.
It was, right? Which was sort of getting used to that was a little different.
Yeah, that's such an amazing concept when you think about it. It's like you write for the future, but the future arrives before
your book.
Yeah, and it was a little bit, I was only a couple pages in where I thought, wait a minute, there's something different about the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, it's not first person. It's not third person. You know, we've had multiple first persons where we had. It's like, what is this? Oh my gosh, this is like.
Well, it's like June. It's like Junie's book. Half of it was first person.
Yeah,
half of it
was
third person.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Yeah, the way she did it was interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Hagenberger's books are always fun.
Oh yes.
And his are always tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're gonna pick up any John Hagenberger, you have to pick up some of the Fall mysteries, Skyfall. Bullet Fall, whatever they are. I mean, they're all over the place.
Shortfall.
They're fun. Stan Waite is the guy. And Hagenberger is the author. And they're just a lot of fun. And you guys, I'm going to miss you this weekend.
You're not going to be there.
No, I'm not going
to
be there.
I said we need to have the chair with like his name. And then it says gone for cobbler.
Just sort of a half a glass of whiskey.
Yeah.
Half a glass. You drank the other half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a pilot in the Air Force and in the Navy, and they had the missing man.
The Air Force or Navy?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Navy to World War II, Air Force after World War II. They used to have the missing man, the shot glass at the end of the bar, And when you missed a pilot, when a pilot was downed, they always poured a shot and they put it at the end of the bar, and then everybody would walk up and salute it, which was kind of really neat. And I don't know who drank the whiskey. I don't know who drank it. Somebody got it at the end of the at the end of the night, but
bartender,
kind of fun. I mean, you know, they had traditions that who knew.
Yeah, I mean, we're, I'm looking forward to this weekend. I really am.
I am too.
Are you?
Yeah.
Now, you're both days, right?
Yeah, I'll be there both days. Mm-hmm. And I figure if I'm going to take the weekend off, I might as well be there both days.
You might as well. Is JR going to be there both days?
Okay. Yeah, the only person there one day only is Kitty Ryan on Saturday.
Right.
Everybody else is there both days.
I just got a Facebook message from Kitty Ryan.
You did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My my buddy Al Burke said he's going to show up.
Oh, good.
From Sundown, who has been done a zillion things, acting and stuff like
that. Let everybody on our radio world know what you're giving away at your table or selling, because there's something to do with Sundown.
Yes. Aside from the books, I will be having, I've got a DVD of the our short film, Sundown, the Western short film, which is a 9.5-minute film. And on the DVD is the 9.5-minute film, the 1-minute trailer, and the poster also on the DVD.
Excellent.
And we're going to be selling for $7, which is basically what they cost us.
Cost, yeah.
And so we'll have those there. Where they're already dubbed off, and Eric's face is on the cover. Eric Heisner.
Of course.
Yeah, he's going to love that. You know?
Of course.
I took a screenshot from the poster upper body shot of him, and that's what we put on the DVD.
So yeah, yeah.
It came out pretty. And it's funny because there's a bullet hole right here, right in the middle of the DVD.
Well, you know, if for those of you who Bob Brill last year made a 10-minute short film called Sundown, and it actually has won some awards, mm-hmm. although I did mention at the time that they had to buy their own award because they didn't give him one. He just won it. They didn't give him anything.
Yeah, the fortunes of a festival.
I know, huh? But if you haven't seen it or you haven't even heard about it, go to YouTube. You can find it in YouTube.
It's on Vimeo. Vimeo, yeah.
And you can just go under Sundown, Bob Brill, and it's right there. And it's actually a terrific 9.5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. They could actually go to bobbrill.com, and they can follow the link from there, too.
Our good friend Eric Heisner is in it.
Al Bringus.
And Bob Brill, he's the saloon owner.
And Al Burke.
Al Burke is the marshal. The
sheriff.
The blind sheriff.
The sheriff.
So, anyway, the Cowboy Festival is this weekend in Newhall at William S. Hart Park. There is no admission fees.
No admission, and you can get all the details at cowboyfestival.org.
.org. And, boy, show up if you can, and make sure you stop by the Buckaroo Bookshop. Mm-hmm. Say hi to Bobby and Jim and Bob Brill and JR and whoever else is going to be there. Courtney Joyner?
Yep. Cool. Courtney's there one day only, Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
He's got his shotgun series plus his new Nemo book.
He's with us just one day this year. Saturday.
Court's a good guy. If you haven't met him, you need to meet him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's too bad Johnny isn't going to be there again this year. You could really bust his nuts. But, okay, that's it for us for another Thursday evening. We have managed to destroy it. For Bobby Jean Bell sitting here in the studio, say goodnight, Bobby.
Good night.
Bob
Thank you
Brill.
For listening.
Good night, Bobby.
And for myself, Jim Christina, and the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.